Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, March 19th, 2026. I would like to call the Ponsonby Town Council to order, and I'd ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all council members are present and in chambers. We are now at item four. Do we have any additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda, Mike?
None from staff.
Yes, I do.
You do. Okay, yes. Go ahead, Phil.
I'd like number eight, the consensus that we're going to be working on for the implementation of the 2025 employee classification, to be broken down into three sections. Section 8A to be the salary consideration. Section 8B to be the supplement stipend consideration. And 8C, the merit consideration. 2026 is supposed to be the start this budget season for 8A, so, and the other two are not going to be implemented until 2027. So I think we need to separate them out and discuss them and then decide whether how we want to move forward for the consensus.
Yeah,
yes, Skip.
And Mayor, I was actually going to bring that up as we moved along, but if you look at it, to me, technically there are four items that we'll be reviewing. When I say four, Bill, you're correct as far as the compression, and it's two different sections of compression. I don't have it in front of me, but Mayor, again, if you give me a second, there is two different thoughts in here as far as the compression. And I had a conversation with Michael on Monday, and this is what we actually discussed. Should we look at this as four separate votes since it's four separate items? And if you look,
the fourth one is,
let me get my glasses on. We have the first one is bringing the employees up to currently new salary level minimum. That's number one. Number two, the wage compression. And then number three is wage compression for the supervisors. And then number four is the performance evaluation.
Okay. So you're saying actually then instead of three, you want to break the one I said was 8A into
correct.
Three different things.
That's correct.
And then you still want to have the stipend supplement as one, and you want to have the merit pay as one.
Correct.
So we're basically talking, five
correct.
Instead of three.
Excuse me, could I remind everyone to speak into the microphones, please? That way we can
I'm get sorry.
It recorded.
I'm getting my hearing aid Tuesday. That'll help. Did you catch what I said? Would Skip and I said? Any of it?
No. I heard Skip. I didn't hear what
you said. I said originally break it into three. Skip said take the first one, 8A, and break it into three separate ones because there's three different items within that one.
Yes, and that's the way it's listed. It's broken down that way in the presentation.
Okay, so I really think it's a good idea to separate each of them out. I actually had it separated out for purposes of discussion.
Perfect.
With the possibility of separate motions depending upon where the discussions led us. So what I think we need with this is that for purposes of the amended agenda, I would like one of you to make the motion unless you want a further discussion. Would you like to make it,
go
Bill?
Ahead.
I'd like to make a motion that item 8 be broken down into five categories. Three categories concerning the salary compensation, et cetera, the other items that would go into effect in this budget year, 2025-2026. The fourth one would be the discussion concerning supplements and stipends, and the fifth one would be the procedure and implementation of a merit pay program.
Is that Did you want to modify that? I don't know what to do procedurally. I saw.
Yeah, I would. I was actually for Bills 5, so I'll go with Bills 5. I'll second the motion.
You'll second the motion. Okay, we have a motion and a second. And with respect to the rest, nothing else is modified or amended? No. Okay. So, thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we have the agenda as modified. Okay. So, now, let's go back. Okay. We are up to item 5, citizen participation. I have before me one pink slip, a citizen participation request. If there's anyone else who wishes to speak during this time, please fill one of these out. They are with our town clerk, Kim Trebano, seated in the front, and you'll be asked to place your name on the record when I call you, and you will have up to 5 minutes to speak. So I have one here, and that is John Belden from Port Orange and South Daytona Chamber. Please come up.
Good afternoon, guys. My first meeting, and I'm already front and center. I like it.
Yes, you are.
All right. So anyways, my name is John Belden. I'm on the board of directors of the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber of Commerce. First off, we appreciate our relationship with the city of Ponce Inlet. And I'm actually born and raised in Port Orange, and I worked at what was called Ocean Docks back in the day. Now it's Races North Thurn. So I've been a fan of Ponce Inlet for many, many years. So thank you for everything that you guys do. Just want to let you guys know about a few upcoming events. We'd love to have you guys out tonight. Matter of fact, there is a business after-hours event at Tiki Docks just over the bridge. If you make your way that way, it's between 5 and 7 p.m. tonight. It's going to be a great event. We're just over the bridge. A lot of people don't realize on that side of the bridge that they can drive over here, and a lot of people over here don't know they can go over there. But we'd love to meet. So 5 to 7 at Tiki Docks tonight. We have a great monthly event called Coffee and Connections. That our next event is next Thursday at Copperline Cafe at 9 a.m. Again, some great people, business community, and they love to meet our local constituents from areas such as Ponce Inlet. So please, you're welcome. There's a golf tournament. We have any golf fans in here? No? No? Okay. All right. I'm learning to play. Father Ray O'Leary Memorial Golf Tournament is going to be April 25th at 8:30 a.m. So, again, definitely we'd love participants. And one of our signature events in Port Orange is a Tasteful Affair, which is April 30th. Tons of great restaurants, food and drinks. If you guys know any restaurant owners from this neck of the woods that would like to participate, we definitely would love to have them involved. It'll be at the Riverside Pavilion on April 30th from 5 to 8 p.m. And lastly, July 25th, we have our casino night, which is one of our signature events. A lot of fun from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Riverside Pavilion. There'll be blackjack, bingos, craps, roulette. And tickets, proceeds will go partially towards funding scholarships for local students. So residents and council alike, please attend, and I appreciate your time. Thank you, guys.
John, thank you very much, and I would encourage everyone to look them up. They have a wonderful website that outlines all of the events. There's nobody else who have provided a pink slip. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Seeing none, I will close citizen participation. Thank you. And now we are up to our proclamations, presentations, and awards. We have with us today Jim Cannon, who I will be presenting our proclamation for Water Conservation Month. Mr. Cannon is from St. John's River Water Management District, and he is the governmental coordinator of their governmental affairs program. We are delighted to have you here with us today, and we thank you for coming. So permit me, please, to read the proclamation, and then I will present it to you, Mr. Cannon, at the podium. Okay? And this is a proclamation of the town of Ponce Inlet. Whereas water is a basic and essential need of every living creature, And whereas the state of Florida, water management districts, and the town of Ponsinlet are working together to increase awareness about the importance of water conservation. And whereas the town of Ponsinlet and the state of Florida have designated April, typically a dry month when water demands are most acute, Florida's Water Conservation Month, to educate citizens about how they can help save Florida's precious water resources. And whereas the town of Ponsinlet has always encouraged and supported water conservation through various educational programs and special events. And whereas every business, industry, school, and citizen can make a difference when it comes to conserving water. And whereas every business, citizen, school can help by saving water and thus promote a healthy economy and community. And whereas outdoor irrigation comprises a large portion of water use, the town of Ponsinlet will encourage citizens and businesses to focus on improving outdoor irrigation efficiency. And now, therefore, I, Lois A. Peritsky, mayor of the town of Ponsinlet, Florida, do hereby proclaim April 2026 as Water Conservation Month. The town of Ponsinlet calls upon all residents and businesses to help protect our precious water resources by practicing water-saving measures and increasing awareness of the importance of conservation. In recognition of the 28th year of Water Conservation Month, this year's focus will be on ensuring that outdoor irrigation systems operate efficiently by using properly functioning rain shutoff devices. By making sure these devices are installed, connected, and working as intended, our community can prevent unnecessary watering, reduce waste, and make better use of the rainfall we receive. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and cause the seal of the town of Ponsinlet, Florida, to be affixed this 19th day of March, 2026. So with that, I would ask you, Jim, if you wouldn't mind, meet me at the podium. On behalf of all the municipalities, here is the proclamation, and I don't know if you'd like to say a few words. Or,
sure. Yeah. I'd be happy to. Yeah. Madam Mayor and Council, thank you for making the effort with this proclamation. We do this every year. This is I think it's the 28th year. This is, and I realize these are kind of brief, and it's once a year. But the point of this is to put it back on everybody's radar and bring awareness to the water issue. It's not racy, it's not sexy, but it is vital to the health and welfare of Florida, especially with the population growth, ongoing development, and the expansion of the state as a whole. So this is just a good way to put it back on everybody's mind, and we ask, we don't demand, we simply ask, we request that everybody be mindful of their water use. We are still in a dry season. Right now, the entire state is in varying degrees of drought conditions, with about half the state under what they consider extreme drought conditions. And so it's ever more important during years like this, where it's very, very dry, and we have a long way to go before the wet season, to just be aware of daily water use. So, again, we thank you.
Thank you. And we'd like to just have a picture with us with the proclamation, if that's where would you like that, Becky?
Yeah, right here.
Right here?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Turn them in.
Again,
Mayor,
appreciate
it.
You too. Item 7, the consent agenda. There are 3 items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull one of the items? Anyone? Anyone in the audience? Council, seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, we are now up to item 8A1, okay? But we'll start item 8A. We have with us the our HR director, Ms. Trebano, who will lead the conversation for the implementation options for the 2025 employee classification and compensation study from MGT Impact Solutions.
Now, excuse me, Mayor, if I could. The way the report from staff and also the presentation from the consultant is done as a combined presentation, so we could like to go ahead and make that presentation in its entirety and then have the council address each of the different items, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mike. That would be great. Okay, so we'll do the presentation in its entirety, and you'll begin, Ms. Trebano.
Introduce it, okay? Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. We're here today to discuss the implementation options for the 2025 employee compensation study conducted by MGT Impact Solutions. Joining us today is Rachel Scraggs, the Vice President with GMT, who is here to assist with options, guidance, and to answer any questions. But let me provide a little bit of background information. The last salary study was done in 2016. The new study has been on council's goal for HR department for the past several years. The initial results of the compensation study were presented to council in August of 2025. Staff then revised the study based on council's discretions and public feedback. The updated study was presented on December 10, 2025 at the special council meeting where new pay grades, new salary ranges were discussed. In addition, additional questions, public input was addressed, and council directed staff to return with a plan to address employees below the new minimum salary, aligning adjustments for employees within the new pay ranges, and any necessary funding or budget transfer. During the December Council's regular meeting, Council approved the new pay grades and the salary ranges. Today's presentation outlines the implementation and the funding for the adjustments. MGT is recommending a three-part placement approach. First will be to address the 13 positions currently below the minimum, and will bring those employees to the minimum of the new salary range. Secondly, it will discuss the internal wage compression adjustments, and thirdly, supervisor compression and what all this entails. Next, the implementation across the departments and cost. And what would it cost if it was implemented in April or in phases over time? And how can the town can keep sustaining the plan year after year? Some additional additive administrative changes concerning stipends. Historically, stipends were to support the additional duties and responsibilities of employees who took on duties outside their job descriptions. Staff is proposing to roll these additional responsibilities into the job descriptions of the employees doing them. As part of this process, some positions will be reclassified from non-exempt to exempt status in order to comply with the Fair Labor Standards Act. It is important to note this change does not impact the town's financial. Those costs are already included in the budget. And lastly, the future wage administration, as the town currently operates under an open pay range structure. MGT will provide three options for council to consider. I want to also emphasize that employees' performance evaluations are reviewed annually by their department heads and the HR director. If an employee receives a below satisfactory rating, they are placed on a performance improvement plan, which is also named a PIP. That PIP and the evaluation is submitted to the town manager for review and approval. Now, at this time, I would like to introduce Rachel, the Vice President of MGP Impact Solutions. Thanks for coming, Rachel.
Thank you. All right. Hi, everyone. Good to see you. Thanks for having me. Make sure my presentation's up.
Mayor, can I ask a question before we get started? And I don't want to interrupt a presentation. So should we hold our questions until afterwards, or would you prefer as you go along.
Let's hold, the way I really have it structured for us, so the presentation can be done, you know, so that it's done in a very fluid manner for everybody to hear it from beginning to end. But then we're going to take it separate, each aspect. I mean, we have five parts to it at this point, right?
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, thanks again. It's a pleasure to be in your town and here again, especially from Illinois. Even though it's chilly here, it's better than Illinois. So thanks for having me. I'll go over my presentation and then happy to answer any questions. Okay, so as Kim was mentioning, we, at the December meeting, presented a new pay structure, and it was really a structure that's built to last. So you adopted a fair, competitive, and transparent compensation framework that really aligned with the external market conditions and also looked at internal fairness in terms of how positions relate to one another. Within that structure, there's 12 pay grades. Every position that was part of the study was reviewed and made sure they were slotted into those 12 pay grades based on 9 job factors. And that's what made up the classification plan. In addition, we put together a compensation plan, and each pay grade had a specific range from minimum to maximum, and there was a 40% range spread. So there was consistency within the range spreads that were developed. And we put together an open range plan, meaning there's no defined step increments. It's an open range from a minimum to the maximum. And that's really a best practice that we see in the industry. It allows a lot of flexibility, and it supports recruitment and retention needs as well. So just a quick overview of that, because that's what was presented previously. Now what we have in front of us is the implementation. So how do you implement the new compensation plan? It's really a 3-step process, and we looked at all of these steps, looked at every employee, the positions they were in, to make sure that they were fairly placed in a consistent manner within the new compensation plan. So the first step is minimum. This is a priority. Anyone who's falling below the minimum should be brought to that minimum as soon as possible, because that shows that they've been paid under what we're seeing as the market, the 50th percentile, so they need to be brought to that minimum as soon as possible. The second one is also important because this really looks at compression. So over the last decade, because the last time a compensation study was done was in 2016, so there have been some salaries that were kind of lagging, or there was this incremental pay drift where they're being paid under market conditions because they're not moving through that pay range. So that's what the wage compression adjustment does, and I'll go through that a little more in the coming slides. And then the third one was looking at supervisor compression. So really looking at where supervisors are in relation to their subordinates, right? Making sure at a minimum there should be a 5% differential from the supervisor to the subordinate. So looking at that wage compression adjustment, this was our placement guide. Again, looking at what's an industry best practice, where employees should be within the range. And we really say, you know, if someone's been here for 1 to 2 years and they're at that minimum, then that's sufficient. If someone's been here 3 to 4 years, they should at least be 10% through the range. If they're more than 10%, then there's no adjustment needed. If they're not 10% through the range, then they would be adjusted to 10% of their range for their specific grade. Then that goes up 5 to 7 years, they should at least be at 25%, 8 to 9 years, 40%, and really looking at least 10 to 13 years at that midpoint or median of the range, and then so on. So it really looks at where the current salary is of that position in relation to the grade and where they should be based on those percentiles. This, again, is a one-time alignment. So this brings every position where they should be within that market range one time. It's not a replacement for annual adjustments or performance progression. It's really just sets a fair starting point so that employees can continue to move through the range. When you look at implementation costs, this is how it breaks out per department. Again, you have that cost to minimum in that light blue. You have that compression adjustment in the medium shade blue, and then the supervisor compression adjustment in that darker blue. And you can see the breakdown by department. A majority of the costs are driven by those compression adjustments. And this just breaks that down. This slide is a little busy, but when you look at what the cost is, so a full year implementation cost to implement all three items is at $176,518. If it was implemented April 1st, it's half of that. And that's because employees don't get a lump sum. They get an increase to their hourly rate. So you would only incur half of those costs this fiscal year. And I believe it's my understanding that there's funds within the department budgets that would cover that. So it would be a one-time implementation investment that really aligns all employees with the adapted pay structure and addresses that incremental pay drift that has happened over the last 10 years. So you can see the cost to minimum total is $31,724, and then half of that would be the April 1 implementation cost. The compression adjustment, the total is $129,627. Half of that is $64,814. That would be the April 1. The supervisor compression fixes, that was $15,167. Half of that is $7,584. And again, the total cost being that $176,000 or $88,000 for April 1 implementation. One thing that we did when we went through the job classification and the job factors is we really looked at everything that's encompassed within a position. So some positions here have stipends that they get for these additional duties, such as fire marshal, ADA coordinator, web administrator. When we did that job classification, looked at those nine job factors, we made sure that we included everything that's included in that position's role to score them and put them into that internal classification plan. So we took those duties and used that as part of their job functions and job duties to make sure that they're placed in the appropriate grade. So our recommendation would be to include those stipends in the grade and the implementation process that we've outlined because those have already been taken into consideration within their job duties and functions. What we typically see is if someone is doing that work for a long period of time, it's not just a short temporary assignment, then it should be incorporated into that job duty, job function, and that's reflected through those nine job factors and how we score that position. So that change does have some implications with FLSA, making sure positions are classified correctly, but there's no financial impact there. Moving on, so this is regarding the annual adjustments and how those are applied. Three different options that I'll go over briefly and happy to talk more if there's more questions. So option one would be an annual adjustment, so that October 1st annual adjustment, and then an additional adjustment given on the employee's anniversary date. Some communities handle it this way. It's nice because employees know their increase is coming every year at the same time based on their hire date, but this does create an administrative complexity, especially for HR, especially for supervisors, as they're having to evaluate people at a variety of different points throughout the year. However, it does tie performance to compensation, it reinforces accountability, and it recognizes employee progress. But I think the biggest one is that kind of that administrative complexity for option one. Option two, and this is what we typically recommend, it's our recommendation for many of our clients and what we see a lot of communities doing in the public sector, is their annual adjustment at the start of the fiscal year, and then a performance-based merit increase on April 1st. So there's consistency in when that is given. Everyone knows when that's coming. There's a little bit of administrative tasks to make sure that HR and supervisors get all of that lined up before that and performance evaluations are completed on time so those increases can happen on April 1st. But it is a good way to do it in terms of financial budget and then also scheduling. So again, that also, though, maintains annual adjustments. That's consistent currently with the town's handbook. It creates predictable performance evaluation dates. So again, you get that increase on October 1 and then April 1, and it provides employees with that structure. And then all increases are occurring simultaneously. And then the third option would just be to... Yeah. Oh, sorry. There we go. All right, so that was option two. That's up there now. Sorry about that. That was the one we recommend with the annual adjustment and the merit on April 1st, and then option three is the uniform budget approved increase, and that would just be October 1st, so just that adjustment. My concern with this one is that it would kind of get you in the same place you are now 10 years down the road because employees aren't moving through the range, right? They're not getting those additional performance-based increases. It just adjusts every October 1st. So I think that's the biggest con for this one and something to take into consideration. And then quickly, just the last slide. We want this to be something that you can implement and then use and not have to do this for at least, you know, 5 years. So making sure employees are slotted appropriately within the pay grades is important. Annually, the pay ranges should be updated. So again, not a full compensation study, but the ranges are up. The ranges are updated to make sure that the minimums and maximums are staying with market. You have that annual adjustment, the pay increases tied to performance. And then, of course, everything is subject to a budget review, the financials of the town, and the ability to pay. Okay, so that concludes my presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions or go back over any of that information.
Well, I think that perhaps we do want to get to the questions, but do you want to limit it, because we've broken it down now to 8A1, so are your questions restricted to that, Skip, because I know you have questions, or is it overall questions?
It's more overall, Mayor. Well, if I get to one that's specific, then you can tell me to back up.
What would you like to do?
I'd like to just go ahead and ask the questions, and then, because I actually have two parts. I have questions, and then I have discussion questions for us.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So what we can do is, if there are some generalized questions based on the presentation, go ahead and ask them. Then what we'll do, is that what you like? And then what we'll do, we're going to focus then on 8A and the components of that. Okay, go ahead, Skip.
Perfect. Perfect, Mayor. Thank you. And again, I have a few. So the first question, I think I know the answer, but I want to make sure. What year are we using for this study? 23-24, as this study was first drafted, stated November 2025. If that's the case, we have had two pay increases since then. Was that triggered into your thought process of when you went in and adjusted these salaries?
Yeah, so I believe, and I didn't refresh my memory from the December meeting, but we adjusted that to make sure those ranges were current with market, and the implementation costs that we show here are everyone's current pay. So we've taken all that into consideration and the current pay as of now and where it relates to the costs.
The only reason I'm asking is I looked at a couple and they seem to be almost exactly the same as prior, the first presentation back in 2025. I could be mistaken, but I'll take that. I'll take that. But it just seemed, so I'll move on. The wage compression adjustment, was that included in our December workshop?
Not the... this scale, no.
Okay. Why was that not included then? And my point is, we received this on Thursday, and we've had 1 week to digest this. And it's the biggest piece financially that we're looking at. So I have concerns about it, and we'll get to it, Mayor. But, you know, I just want to make sure that I didn't miss it. And I had a conversation with Michael for an hour and 45 minutes on Monday about this to make sure that I didn't miss that in the original presentation.
Yeah, we typically don't include with our studies. We just provide the ranges, which is what we did. So, of course, there's always that adjustment to bring employees to minimum, which was shown in December. But this is an additional task. I don't know if that's the right word, but this was an additional thing that we do to say, okay, looking at this full picture, where should employees really be based on where they are within their range and within the new range. So this was like an additional item that we looked at, and that was after the December.
Correct. So this is the first time a council has been able to look at this. Mm-hmm. Was this a replacement for the longevity plan? Okay. That we said no, we didn't want.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a replacement, but we heard the longevity was not an option. We looked back at, you know, what's really best practice? How should employees really be placed? And what do your current salaries look like? And where are they falling within the range?
Okay. How do we come up with the percentages through the range? It was on page 2 and page 4 of the presentation.
Yeah.
Where did the range come from?
So we typically look at... industry-wide, when we do these studies, an employee should be...
Can I ask before, industry-wide, is that government?
Government, yes.
So no one else?
We looked at, mostly government, and what we recommend is that you should be, and we looked at like Sherm and Mercer and their recommendations. It's typically you want to be at the 50th or 50% through the range by at least 10 years. It's actually less than that. It's 8 to 10. But because of costs, my recommendation for the town was to look at 10 to 13 as being 50% through the range.
Okay. And again, as stated in the memorandum, and this is actually, I guess, the big piece for me, in the memorandum by the town in the presentation, this is a one-time adjustment, which I totally understand that. But the problem is this is a fixed cost. This fixed cost goes in forever until that employee is no longer with the town. So, yes, it's a one-time fix, correction, but it's also an ingoing cost, a fixed cost, that will continue to grow.
Correct. I think by one time, you know, it's not that they get this increase this year and then next year they get the increase one time and then going forward, they move through the range.
And I understand it, but again, it is a fixed cost that does not go away. And in my past, sometimes we've given employees a one-time bump, but then it comes back. So just want to be clear on that one. Moving forward with this plan, and I know, Randy, you're back there, and I didn't know your IT guy had left. So I'll pick on Randy because I found out Monday that he'd been gone. But if Steve Jobs walks into this building, I've used him as an example on Monday, Michael laughed. If he walks into this building and says, you know what, I want to relax for a while. I want to work in Ponsonant. I want to work for Randy. And where am I going to fit in the pay range? And the answer I got was, it depends on experience. Well, I don't think you're getting more experience in IT than that guy. So where would he fall in this range, and how would we handle that to keep Randy from next year saying, yeah, I'm going to hire this guy, but then he gets in the compression mode the following year?
Yeah, so typically the recommendation is you can hire employees within the range based on experience, usually up to the midpoint, but there might be some circumstances where it's a really hard to fill position, you don't have a lot of applicants, you know, that range at the midpoint isn't something that employee is interested. So there is potential to hire above that, but typically we say anywhere up to the midpoint based on experience.
But if we started getting above the midpoint again, wouldn't that put us back in the same boat that we're in now?
It shouldn't be every time, but for those unique positions that are hard to fill, you have that flexibility.
But our guardrails would be Mike and Kim. There's nothing in here that says you cannot do this, correct?
No, that's not, excuse me, that's not correct. We do have a personnel manual that does establish those guardrails.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. I don't know that. So there is guardrails there. Perfect. Okay.
Let me interrupt you just real quick. What was the position that it was in the planning department that when we advertised it, no one applied, and you had to come back to us to raise the salary scale on the chart and then give a bonus on top of it to be able. What position was that?
Yeah,
do you
remember? Senior planner.
Senior planner.
And I mean, been hard to fill.
How long was that position vacant until you guys came back and said we need to put in a? So what they did is we put it into a mid range rather than starting at the beginning. That was a help. Then we put the bonus. Then we didn't even put a moving bonus in there.
No, it's just a one-time bonus. So yeah, there's our manual has a provision for hard to fill positions. And they get you can hire them at a certain percentage above the minimum. Right. And then it also provides for this one-time bonus on top of that.
And my point was that the town had to do that.
Oh, I remember. Oh, no. But in seriously, Bill, I do remember that. And that's the reason I'm asking the question, because my whole point with that particular point is we're moving with this, but I don't want to get back in the same boat that we're in. So I'm asking some questions to make sure that we totally understand it. And we have guardrails up. I'll save that one. Let me put a little star. I'll save this one. Hang on, Mayor. But the last one I have, I guess, for you is every position that we're looking at in here, and this might sound a little crazy, but I'll go somewhere with it later. Every position is based on a 40-hour-ish work week, correct? And it's based on your job that you're titled. Your title is your preliminary job. It's based on a 40-hour work week, correct?
Yeah, it's tied to hourly. I don't know if I can't remember offhand if there's any, you know, individuals that work under 40 hours, because then it would be less than that.
Right. Well, and again, the last piece, and I'll get to some numbers in a minute when we start having our discussion, but to clarify your numbers, there is no benefits included in that number. That is just a salary number.
Base compensation.
Benefits are not included. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions in a general way before we begin a discussion on our 8-1 with our three parts? Any questions? Okay. So, you know, there are multiple aspects of this item for our consideration, and we can begin with employees who are currently being paid below the adopted salary range minimums. Is there any conversation on that?
No. And kind of the way, Mayor, I wrote my notes up, hoping we'd go this way, I have no problem with it. You know, I have no problem with actually starting that, this one particular piece only, Michael, this one particular piece only, of starting in April. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. The other ones we'll discuss. But okay, this one particular item, I'm fine with people that are below the minimum in April getting them up to minimum, which would be, I don't have their number written down, $17,000 or whatever it was for 6 months. And then it goes into the full year, $31,000 going forward in 26, 27.
Would it be fair to say that the council is comfortable with the employees who are being paid below the adopted salary range minimums to be brought up as of April 1? Okay, because then we don't have to discuss that further. Okay, we're going to move into the compression part of the proposals. We could start with the staff, and then we could go with the supervisors, the employees rather than the supervisors. So is there anything anyone would like to say beginning with that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and sorry. But let me ask you one more question. And this is where I guess I got a little confused, where we have, let me get the exact verbiage here, where we have the aligned pay based on years of service wage compression adjustment, number two, that we're discussing now. And then number three, I'm not jumping ahead, but address supervisor compression. What's the difference of the two?
Yeah, so the second one, the wage compression adjustment, looks at where employees should be within the range, within the new range, to make sure, you know, if there's no pay, that incremental pay drift that I talked about. So since they haven't been moving through the range, where should they be? Once they're there, then we looked at the difference between the supervisor and the subordinate to make sure that there's that 5% differential. So first, it's just looking specifically at each employee, and then the second component is looking at supervisor.
Okay, and so this will tie into that, and Michael, you or someone can answer it for me. But when I looked at the spreadsheet that we received from that list, it's actually, page is not numbered, but it's at the very end of your presentation. There's actually directors and supervisors in this.
Yes.
Why? Because why would they not be under supervisor?
Well, they're both, right? And the adjustment's going to be the same regardless, because you're looking at the positions, every position individually, on where they are within their range. And then once you move them appropriately there, then we look at the supervisor compression. You could do it the other way, but then you would have to look at supervisor compression at the end again, because you're looking at where employees' positions are. So that's the first step, where they're falling within their range, not compared to anyone else, any other position or subordinate. Just where should that position realistically be within that pay grade? And then looking at where they fall in comparison to their supervisor.
So it's not based upon the number of direct reports that they have or that they supervise people.
That's the third.
That's where I'm getting lost.
Yeah, not necessarily. The third component, the supervisor compression, is going to look at that. Who's the highest paid employee that directly reports to them, and are they at least 5% above that? That's what that supervisor compression looks like. The wage adjustment compression looks at where that position's falling within their pay grade, their newly assigned pay grade, and where they should be within that pay grade.
Okay. All right. So I guess now is when I'll jump into my numbers. You know, this is, we have to do something, and I understand that. And again, I'm actually for supporting the program. The concern that I have is from the financial aspect of it, and that with everything going on from Tallahassee across the world, we have a lot of things coming our way. So I actually did my own skip pro forma, and Mike and I have talked about doing pro formas because I think this would have been a perfect time for the town to do one. But I did a skip pro forma. And what I did was I took the total salaries, our budget for this year, and I excluded our first responders. And so with the MGT study, it's $176,518, as we stated. I said, okay, just an easy number that we normally do. They'll be receiving a 3% pay increase in 26-27, and that's what we normally do, but that's standard what we've been doing. So the number comes up to $260,576 for next year. That's not including any benefits. Example, you know, our retirement plan. And Kim and I talked about that on Monday. I couldn't really get a straight number on that, not that you weren't trying to give it to me, but some departments are different than others on the retirement plan. So then I went a step further. I said, okay, let's take a look at our first responders. 7.5% has already been negotiated. If you take that number, add to it, then our overall number, which that was $142,830 for next year, that takes our total salary increase to $403,406. $403,406. I've attended both of the essential services boards, and items for CapEx, the big dollar stuff, went right through the system. I know they hadn't been approved by council, but that's $855,000. So if you take those two and add together, you're at $1.3 million increase before we start buying the pens and paper and pencils that are below the $50,000. I have a concern with that. But I understand we need to do it. So I have a suggestion, and Mayor, if I suggest now or should
absolutely.
I wait?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We're discussing.
Okay. My suggestion would be, and Michael, I've come down a little bit from our discussion on Monday, I would not be opposed to taking these funds and saying, okay, starting next year's budget, spread it out over a four-year period of time. The reason I say that, our plan is 10 years old. This was not created in 1 year. We can't dig ourselves out. We can't obligate this kind of money, in my opinion, and continue to do the things that we need to do overall as a town. I want to support all of our employees. But if we do that, it allows us to find other ways that we can cut our expenses in the years to come. So that was my first suggestion, my first thought on that. And, you know, I'll use the example. The reason I did this, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, as a resident standing back there behind that podium and when I ran for office, I fully supported hiring 3 additional firefighters and 2 additional police officers. I support that again today. My big concern is I wasn't smart enough at the time to understand the impact that it was going to have on overtime. My thought at that time as a resident was, oh, we'll hire 3 more people, overtime goes away. Well, it doesn't. It adds to it. And I'm comfortable with that. I really am. But at that particular moment in my life, I didn't understand it. So that's the reason I've spent a lot of time on trying to think through this. I want to be fair to our employees. I want to be fair to our residents. I want to be fair to the CapEx items that we're going to need as we move forward with our storm drainage systems and all the other projects, Building B, potential fire department. We have so many things moving and going on, and I had a conversation with Dan Scales. You know, it's very tough when you start talking about employee salaries. It's a very difficult thing to do. So I'll shut up from there, but I do want the employees to know I support you. It's not that I don't, but I think we need to look at the total impact financially. Thank you.
Thank you, Skip. Okay, so we can open for further discussion. Would anyone like to, Joe, Bill, Gary? Because we're talking about, it looks like we're really talking about the compression issues for both the employees and staff right now.
Yeah, we're basically talking about their years of seniority. And one of the things that we've never built
in. Could you talk into the mic?
I thought it was. One of the things we've never built in is that actual thing of seniority. In the public sector, wherever I've ever worked, there always was some type of step, seniority, number of years work, and you build up on that. And then at a certain point, it's capped, and it never gets built up again. It's usually a 10 to 13. And I used the example, I was talking to Rachel about it today. Here's what's happened in the state, but never mind. You don't even want to discuss what's happened in the state of Florida, but I always talk about education. I'm sorry, but I always talk about education, and I was explaining to Rachel, I started teaching in 1967. As a lark, I saw a county in the state of Florida that was just thrilled that their beginning teacher was going to start at $50,000 a year. That salary was actually higher than some of the employees that have been there for 2 to 3 years, and they put nothing in to raise those employees to a higher level. And the kicker was, I actually took my 1967 salary and put it to $2,025. The buying power of that $50,000 was almost 10% less than the buying power I had in 1967 with a $5,600 salary. And the reason was, going back to back then, they had not put in steps. It was, well, this is what I'm going to give you this year. This is what I'm going to give you next year. So I'm along with Skip. I mean, Skip's behind it, but seniority matters. We had, 10,000 teacher vacancies in the state of Florida last year because people are leaving in droves because we're 50th in the nation in teacher salaries. I had a friend, a person I hired. He just announced that he's got his 30 years on Facebook. He's leaving. He was great. He did everything for his distributive education or his distributive clubs of America. He was phenomenal. National awards, national committees. He just turned in his resignation. He got a job in Georgia for $15,000 more because they were given specified stipends and years of seniority. He's going, and they're putting him on the scale at the top end of the scale because of the years of experience. So it's important to me that we have that built in. And I think Skip's 100% behind it, but he's concerned about the monies. Yes. I am concerned about the monies because God only knows they only had one job to do, and that was to pass a budget. And they played around with everything. They're talking about this. They're talking about that. They didn't put, we now know that the voucher program has been a bust because they just announced that they found out of the $2.5 billion that was given, they found a $400 million error in the monies that they gave out. So it scares me. And I can understand where Skip's coming from with the salary concern. But if we do it now, we're not going to have to do it 5-10 years again, because we've done everything we're supposed to do to put it in the right place now. And I thank the staff and you for putting it all together in those special meetings that this council had in December that I was unable to attend.
Thank you, Bill. Joe?
My feeling about this program is that I've been through this at least 5 or 6 times at the company that I worked for. And we have looked at every principle that we need to look at in managing a business, okay, and managing the employee's salary structure, their pay structure, and keeping in mind the fact that where we are physically located as a town and the pay scales around Central East Coast Florida, we are by no means high paid, no means. So we have to consider things like that if we want to get the best character, the best employee possible. And to do that costs a couple of bucks. Now, when you have a good employee and an employee is very, very satisfied at their job, they are motivated to do more and more because they enjoy the job and they enjoy the accolades that they get from everybody else. So in my opinion, this program is a no-brainer. I understand the compression with salaries. I've been through it myself. But these are things that have to be addressed, have to be corrected, and done. There is no way out of it. This is the way life is.
Gary?
And by the way, Steve Jobs would never apply for a job here.
You watch. He'll walk through the door one day.
Gary?
Well, I have a general statement that I like to live by, and that's that we have spent a lot of time and money going to professional people to get professional ideas and the direction we have. We are not a strong mayor government. We are a county manager or a town manager government, and they are supposed to run this town with our direction and approval. And I think what they want to do is I'm behind that to do it the way they want to run the town because they do it day to day.
Thank you, Gary. And I want to share that I feel that this staff report and your report, it was done beautifully. I'm very appreciative of it. I want to remind everybody that in December, the council approved the new pay grades and the salary ranges, and calling your attention to lines 80 and 81 of the staff report, funding is available in each department to pay for these one-time adjustments. It's not necessary to pull additional money from reserves or revenue. And my concern is that if we roll this out over several years, the COLA adjustments and possibly the merit raises, they're directly indexed to compensation. And by delaying implementation, we will have employees that just don't have adjustments calculated for an amount of money that will make it so that they want to be here, they want to stay here. It has a compounding effect where the staff members will never quite catch up. And I don't know the impact on their retirement pay. It could. You know, even worse, the dollar impact gets worse the more money you make. Because by way of example, our longest staff member will fall within this group. He's an individual who puts his life on the line and performs his duties wearing a bulletproof vest every day. So, you know, staggering the implementation of adjustments that we already voted for, I don't have any specific data on how this would adversely impact any employees, but quite frankly, I think we all know that it will if we're talking about implementing anything over 4 to 5 years. So if I'm hearing the council members correctly, and we still have to open this up to the public, is Skip, you're amenable to accepting the compression aspect of this over a 4 or 5 year period.
Yeah. And Mary, if I could, I'd like to address and I am definitely for this program.
Yeah.
Do I have some questions? Yeah, like we always do, but that doesn't matter. And Gary, you're 1,000% right. When I met with Michael and Kim for an hour and 45 minutes of pleasure, it was funny because I reminded them that I know I have to be careful. I am not the regional president at U.S. Food Service anymore, but I can give them my opinion, and I ask to speak freely. And when Kim says, yes, you can, then I do. And I do understand, but we are in charge of managing the financial piece that Michael gets to manage the town. My concern is, again, we're looking at, once you put benefits in, over a $500,000 increase in 1 year. And then 850 right now of CapEx, that potential will be in the budget. So I made the comment to Kim and Michael, and I don't mind saying it here. We're going to have to figure out, are we going to buy cars and trucks and buildings and this, or are we going to take care of our employees? Then I come up with a thought, we possibly could do both and continue rebuilding our fleet and building buildings and taking care of flood water. My concern is if we don't get a handle on it, and I know my goal was to be less than 6 mils, Mike's goal was less than 6 mils, and I keep that in the back of my head as we go along. I don't see our home values, property values, I'm not a crystal ball, but I don't think we're going to get the increases that we've seen over the past years. So I'm trying to think about the overall budget, not just this. And so please don't take me wrong when I say this. I've had three conversations with Andrew, our lobbyist, because of House Bill 1329 that we haven't even talked about yet. And you know, starting in 2020, it hadn't been signed yet, but this is right in DeSantis' wheelhouse, in my opinion. But it's called Local Government Financial Transparency and Accountability. And it puts us in that boat. So that's my other concern. We have to do a budget, and then we have to do a budget that's less than 10%. And we have to present both of them to our residents. And we have to put both of them online. And Lois, I like the idea about Florida League of Cities having be able to